Reverend Ted Pike.
Yes, John.
You troublemaker, you. Good Friday to you.
Well, same to you, John. Nice to hear your voice again. It's been a while.
Well, I'll tell you what. Ted, the ADL is very proud of the fact that they have said, come out and said, that we're the ones that wrote the language for the hate crime laws. Now, Yes, they are. I do not see...
Absolutely.
I do not see any other group, Italians, Germans, Baptists, anybody else that ever had to have laws crafted to keep people from saying what they perceive as being negative things.
Yes, absolutely.
So the way I look at this is that you have to necessarily pass laws because the dialogue is ongoing and you want it shut down. And you
want
the respective governments of which you operate in, you want them to be the judge, jury, and executioner. All somebody has to do is accuse you of being anti-Semitic. You've committed a hate crime. You're prejudicial. You're not tolerant. You're in a sewer, but you can't say that it smells. That's a hate crime.
Yeah. Well, you know, you said it well when you said it's not the average Jew that is the problem. The real problem is, as this previous caller said, the Jews who make a business out of screaming anti-Semitism in order to rake in a $60 million budget like the Anti-Defamation League. And ADL, of course, has been screaming anti-Semitism, doing its best to obfuscate the fact that Wall Street is primarily Jewish and making it not quite a hate crime in America, but certainly making it anti-Semitism to state the obvious. And what I've been doing over the last several years is I've been very troubled by Joe Farah, CEO, owner of WorldNet Daily, as he has made his online newspaper a conduit for the rankest, most illiterate disinformation coming straight out of Tel Aviv from Aaron Klein and the rest of the gang there in the Jerusalem Post and so on. He used to be an editor for it or something. Anyway, he is a lackey of the Zionist machine, and I have periodically popped off with pretty powerful emails delineating exactly how he has gone so far astray and is leading about 7 million monthly visitors astray. And evidently, this is under his skin because just a week or two ago, Jeff Rentz got an angry email from him saying that basically that I was a liar. And then another communication came to me from a WorldNet Daily reader who was asking Farah what his response to some of these articles was, and he outright called me a lying anti-Semite. He says, I don't respond to lying anti-Semites. And so this writer has libeled me. He has held up my name and reputation as the chief antagonist to the federal hate crimes law, which he also opposed. But he's now holding me up. Who knows how many other people he has described me as a lying anti-Semite to, and I'm not going to take it. I'm not going to let him get away with it.
Well, and I appreciate that. By the way, that phone that people heard ringing, I never turned my cell phone off because most people understand that when I do the program, and I always have that with me in case of emergencies. I forget to put it on vibrate instead of ring. But that was actually Jeff Rentz that had called me on my cell. And what we're going to do is attempt to get Jeff Rentz on with you as well.
Oh, great. I just called him 5-10 minutes ago.
Really?
Telling him I was going to be on your show momentarily.
Okay.
Wondering if he'd like to have me on, too. So that'd be great.
Okay. Let's do this. Mr. Producer, if you'll come this away, put down that phone. Let me give you Mr. Rentz's private number and see if you can get him up on the air. It's in the arms. Go ahead. Call him on the office line. At any rate, we'll see if we can do this. Now, Ted, I've had you on this program specifically over the years about this thing about anti-Semitism. Now, I've had a personal conversation with Abe Foxman. He, years ago, wrote a story and put it on his website that included me. More inference without fact. And I told him, I said, I want you to keep writing about me. I said, because what I'm trying to do is set people free of the dogma and the disinformation that's being spread.
Good.
And I invited him to keep writing stories about me, use my website, tell them when I'm on. Jews are people, too, that get curious, just as we all do. So let them get curious and come over and listen to what I have to say. You know, you'd swear that my family lineage was the people that invited invented Cyclone B. Or, you know, that I... You know what I find fascinating about this? You spoke of industry. And it is such that you cannot even dispute a figure that they settled on, that there were 6 million Jews that were killed in Hitler's Germany, that they were put in the gas chambers. Cyclone B was used, and they were killed, and they were murdered. And there wasn't 6 million Jews, I think, at that time in all of Europe. But the point being, whether it was 10,000 or 10 million or 100 million, doesn't matter. If you question the official figure, like Ernst Zundel has, like other people around the world have, you are hounded and persecuted and jailed because you have an opinion.
Yeah.
That should tell people that who you're dealing with, they mean to protect their business. And this is
absolutely. And this this paranoia about any kind of inquiry into the Talmud, into the Kabbalah, into international banking, into on, is a symptom of the fact that Jewish supremacism has a tremendous amount to hide. In fact, there is no other group that seems to have as much to hide as this cabal of Antichrist Jews, a small minority, even within Judaism. Jews are only 1.5-2% of the American population, and these radical left-wing Jews are a small percentage of that, even though the Jewish community is liberal. But the fact that they cannot countenance any truth-telling. I mean, how stupid does a person have to be to believe Abe Foxman that Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, and a host of other financial institutions of Wall Street are not Jewish? I mean, nothing could be more obvious, and yet Foxman is striving desperately now to label any description of the Jewishness of Wall Street as anti-Semitism. And I really think that it's ricocheting, it's backfiring, because the people, I mean, how long can you deceive normally intelligent people saying that all of these Jewish names in Wall Street are not Jewish?
Well, and I've pointed this out. You know, we've got a Holocaust industry. You know, this thing happened over half a century ago. We had a revolution in Russia. And it was turned into a communist state. Well, you look at the players, Trotsky and the like. They were actually themselves Jews.
Of course.
And it has been said, the purges of Russia, the most accurate figures that I have heard, were 50 million dead. 50 million dead. That ended up in the gulags, in slave labor, or were outright killed. 50 million. But yet, everything is directed to Adolf Hitler, Nazi Germany, Jews, Auschwitz, camps, death, over and over, over and over. I don't think there's one person on this planet that has not heard that story. but yet never mentioned almost 10 times that quote-unquote atrocity takes place, yeah. And nary a word about it. Because,
well, I think even China, the established figure is 40 million for China. So you add Robert Conquest, British historian, said it was 66 million in Soviet Russia. I think Solzhenitsyn agreed with that or something. But another 40 million for China, another maybe 5 million in Southeast Asia, if not more than that, not to mention Cuba and so on.
There seems to be, Ted, there seems to be
the ability to believe how these people can continue to get away with exalting the sacred Shoah, the Holocaust. I mean, even Stalin, the fact of history, nobody denies that he killed 5 million kulaks, the Ukrainians, just because they wanted to grow some cabbages in their backyard. And he circled the whole Ukraine and starved them all to death. You know, when Abe Foxman went over to the Ukraine a year or two ago, he laid down the law to the new government in the Ukraine. He said, I don't want to hear anything about your so-called Holocaust, your 5 million dead under Stalin. He says, I want you to give total emphasis in public education in Ukraine now to our Holocaust, our 6 million. And you know what the government of Ukraine did? They meekly bowed before him because they valued his international clout and ability to bring their particular political issues to the world and so on. And so ADL has this notorious record of establishing massive hate crimes legislation, not only in Canada and not only now in U.S., 45 U.S. states, but also they have a 56-member nation hate crimes bureaucracy. They're trying to keep intact in Europe over the last 67 years.
All right, hold on. We've got to take this break. I've got actually Jeff on the studio line in there. I'm going to see if I can get him on air with us. We'll take this break for the network, ladies and gentlemen. We shall be right back. All right, we are back, and Ted, joining us for about 5 minutes, I have the inimitable Jeff Rentz on with us. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, John. Nice to be with you again. I want to salute you as being one of the more honorable people I've ever met in the career of broadcasting, and you have produced many wonderful programs and done many wonderful services to American patriotism, and you deserve all the credit.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I'll tell you what, I want to, before we get into any subject matter here, I just want to let you know something, Jeff, that if you and yours, your Rentz Radio or your site, Rentz.com, if you come under any attack by the ADL, Southern Poverty Law, or anybody else, we will join forces to combat the ne'er-do-wells out there.
Well, thank you. That's very, very much appreciated. I would expect nothing less from a man of your integrity and stature, and the same goes here.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. All right. I've got Ted Pike with me. Jeff, have you gotten any official correspondence from the wonderful Abe Foxman?
No. The only word I had was an email from Joe Farah, as Ted spelled out in his latest video. And I immediately contacted Joe, or at least I tried to. I sent an invitation for him to respond in writing on my site and to have a whole hour on my program if he'd like to reply to anything and everything that Ted has presented. I got no response from him. I was a little disappointed, frankly. I thought at least he'd tell me, you know, take a flying hike or a short walk on a shorter pier or something. But he didn't, so I don't know. Anyway, the invitation is open. I always do it that way. If somebody has a problem, they're welcome to come on and rebut it.
Well, I'll tell you something. The one thing that we do not need, and you told me this before you came on for the short segment, that you've been at this for 17 years, putting in 70-hour weeks. You've never taken a day off in those 17 years.
That's how stupid I am.
Yeah.
It's true, and it does. Well, it's closing in on 15 years, just to narrow it down. But the program itself is in its 18th year. You're correct, but it's getting close to 15 years. And I, I envy people who are actually able to get up in the morning, and I work 14, 16 hours a day. But that's okay. It's an honor, as you know, to be able to serve those who still care and who are trying and yearning to find out what is really going on. And we do our best. And I'm just in that position, as are you. You work awfully hard. So do I. But it's something, when you have the trust of God only knows how many people, that's something very special. And I'm truly very amazed by it, and I respect it tremendously.
Well, and
Jeff, a year or so ago, Abe Foxman did make a comment about you and Rents.com, and he said that Rents.com could give the Jews or the Zionist Jews some real trouble someday. I think that's already materialized. And I just like to repeat echo what John said, that if Rents.com comes under barrage by ADL or FARA or anybody, that National Prayer Network, truthtellers.org, will join forces to stand up for you.
Oh, thank you. I wish Joe would, he's a fellow professional. He has a different view of the world. That's fine. I wish he would just come on and say his piece. I wouldn't even mind if Abe Foxman wanted to come on. I'm happy to hear from these people.
Hmm.
Doesn't bother me any.
Well, I had a short conversation, about a 15-minute conversation with Abe Foxman about 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And I asked him, you know, keep writing stories about me. Don't forget my website. Have the Jewish folks come over to me because I'm trying to help them out, separate themselves from the Zionist and the true Jew. So
we'll see how
that shakes out.
Amen.
All right. Well, Jeff Rents, I appreciate it. Any time that I can be of service, we had a little confab about a year and a half ago over another important issue, and we put that one to bed. So we can get it done anytime.
You put it to bed, and I'm very grateful for that, and I'm grateful on behalf of all the people who care. We didn't need that, and nobody did.
Thank you, Jeff Rents.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Ted.
This Friday edition, and I have Reverend Ted Pike up. How fitting is this? It's Good Friday, folks. A man that has unceasingly, and you should pay attention here, because people like Mr. Pike, Mr. Rents, others, have been fighting the beast for years, and we're proud of it. Okay? If more of our pastors are good attenders of the flock, or truly interested in informing and educating, treating their church members as true family, you would tell a family member if there were evil things getting ready to pounce on them, wouldn't you? Or if something was ready to befall them that would be negative, I'm sure you would. But I see a professed love for all humankind by way of the pulpit, Mr. Pike, but I don't see much love.
That's right. Absolutely. Or love of the truth. The average pastor actually is not a leader. He is led by the people. The people pay the mortgage. The people pay his salary. The people's tithes will go right out the door if he gets into controversy or really addresses the great moral issues of our time. And these great moral issues of our time, which include homosexuality, abortion, etc., these are great biblical issues. These are what the prophets in the Old Testament dealt with, moral sins. But because they're too controversial, the pastor says, well, we're going to exclude those. We're going to keep those out. You can have those out. Maybe we'll allow you to put some flyer on our windshields in the parking lot. But don't you dare begin to alert people about pornography or Zionism issues or liberal issues, homosexuality, abortion, inside this hallowed sanctuary where you're supposed to have your own worship experience with the Creator. Well, I think the Creator would love to come down and reveal to us his burning passion and concern, his vivid, vivid fear of what's coming on the earth if the pulpits of America remain silent.
They have their 501c3s. They have their tax-exempt status from the IRS that should not affect churches to begin with. And Ted, to play devil's advocate for a second, I've seen a lot of people out there selling Jesus, like used cars.
Yeah.
And this is the discernment of the followers or the participants in those various churches. There's no guarantee that the next time that somebody opens a Bible and starts to read psalm or prayer, that they're good people. There's a lot of charlatans out there.
Yes.
And what's really disturbing to me, Ted, is how many people invoke the name of Jesus when they're some of the biggest sinners I've ever seen. And they figure if they slather enough Jesus over something, that somehow that's going to legitimize and bring people in. That, oh, well, they're okay, or that individual's okay, or that organization is okay. I mean, I heard George Bush say that he's read his Bible in the Rose Garden. Really? I don't know to what God he was praying or what Bible he was reading out of. But that man has the blood of millions on his hands.
Yeah.
And he's out watching World Series in front of all the people and God himself. We'll be right back. Let me bring up Melissa in Austin here. Ted, she says she has information on Joe Farah. Hello, Melissa.
Hey, John.
Hi.
I've called in to you about this before, but I wondered if Ted had heard about this. One time years ago, I was channel surfing in the evening, and I came across a show on PBS called Zola Levitt. And his guest, the name of the program was, of that particular show that night, was My Arab Friend, and the guest was Joseph Farah. And that would have been September 26th of 2004. And that's just about the time I stopped looking at WorldNet Daily.
Hmm. Is Farah claiming...
Now, are you talking about Trinity Broadcasting Network?
No, this actually was
PBS.
On PBS.
PBS.
And
oh, really?
The show was Zola Levitt. You just type in Zola Levitt, Zola Levitt, and he did a show for many years from Israel. And he was a Zionist Jew, and he's dead now. And Joseph Farah was his guest two or three different times. But Zola was interviewing him, and Joe Farah stood right there and said, I am proud to be a Zionist Christian. And so it all makes sense, and truly that is when I stopped looking at WorldNet Daily.
Go ahead.
I know that he is quite proud of the fact that he was summoned to go over to Jerusalem to, I believe, as a reporter or an editor or bureau chief or something for the Jerusalem Post. And so he is, he's, of course, of Syrian-Lebanese ancestry, but seems to have made some kind of a very deep commitment to Israel unconditionally. And, of course, he has the Joel Klein from Jerusalem regularly featured with just rank Zionist propaganda. You can absolutely indistinguishable from anything that the government of Israel would put out. So there's a complete censorship there of anything having to do with criticism of Israel. For example, I've written a number of articles about how in southern Israel, in Arad, in Ariel, some of these districts in southern Israel, the Messianic Jews, the Christian Jews there, are regularly harassed, constantly harassed, not only by the surrounding Hasidic ultra-Orthodox fanatics, the settlers types, you know, but also the police look on and actually laugh as they are heckled and harassed, and their meeting places are ransacked and so on. But the government of Israel does nothing about it. This is an atrocious situation, but you will never, never find an article in WorldNet Daily, even for the benefit of fellow Christians in Israel, bringing that discrimination to the realization of of WorldNet Daily readers. This is going on constantly. Nothing. It's a total filter of anything that might reflect unfavorably upon Israel.
Well, and he joins the ranks, obviously, of all the media in this country, which, ironically, are owned by Jews.
Yes.
And when you have that type of filter, it's very dangerous. And
yeah.
What needs to take place is you, and I played your video on air yesterday, by the way, Ted.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and an open and honest dialogue. People that do not fear repercussions from their actions or their deeds are more than happy to proclaim who and what they are, not run from public scrutiny, not put up a wall, impenetrable wall of precluding any conversation whatsoever.
I've been trying, as I say, I've written, three, four, five articles now, critical of this almost canned Zionist propaganda that Joseph Barrett dispenses to 7 million visitors every month at WorldNet Daily. And I've been trying to get them. I will say, as I think I said this on earlier with Joe, Robbie Noel, that WorldNet Daily has joined with me to a very large degree in publicizing the atrocities of hate crimes legislation in Canada, England, elsewhere. But they have blinders on their eyes. Concerning Israel, they will not bring out any hint of criticism to their readers. Now, all what I'm saying right now, in fact, at the end of my video, I lay out this proposal. I say, if you, Joe Farah, will bring forth any substance to your claim that I am a liar and that I am an anti-Semite, I will gladly post it at truthtellers.org. What I'm interested is not even an apology from him so much as the beginning of some kind of dialogue, some kind of recognition that there is something wrong morally. Israel, just as in the time of the Hebrew prophets, just in the time of Jesus, Israel is capable of doing wrong. The Jewish nation is capable of doing wrong, and as such is worthy of constructive reproof, constructive warning that they not repeat the mistakes of their past. And yet this is too much for the evangelical Zionist firsters. They put the blinders on their eyes and their ears, and they say, no, we will hear, see, speak nothing that is negative against God's chosen people.
Yeah.
And what we have here is a real cult of Christianity. Christian Zionism is not authentic Christianity. It bears no resemblance to the Old Testament clear warnings that the Jews will never be allowed by God in mass as a nation into Palestine when they are wicked, when they are Christ-persecuting, when they are wreaking injustice upon the indigenous inhabitants. And yet this cult of Christianity has flourished for a century. What I'd like to do is I'd like to begin to have a national debate, get it out on the table, let them call me anti-Semitic, but I'm going to remind them of what true Christianity, the true biblical stand, really is concerning the house of Israel.
Well, and Ted, and by the way, Melissa, are you still there?
Yes, I had something else if I could.
Yeah, I was just going to say to you that every once in a while, articles are sent to me from WorldNet Daily, which we'll post on this website, republicbroadcasting.org, because it's factual and germane.
Right.
What I've noticed happening with Joe Farah, if we remember back, oh gosh, going back 2000, 2001, WorldNet Daily was somewhat smaller, but cutting edge, more than they are now. What it has done with the likes of, he constantly promotes, who's the Republican, blonde-haired, long-necked Republican? Think of her name here in a second. Ann Coulter. She can get very testy and very outrageous and very acidic. But Republicans good, Democrats bad. Every time I see this going on, this is just adding support to the political division in this country. I don't need to be divided if I'm a Republican from a Democrat, or if I'm a Democrat from an independent. because we should all be unified under one thing, and that's called the Constitution. They've turned us into a political show, a three-ring circus for entertainment purposes and for votes and for power and for money. Nothing to do with the law, nothing that's right or wrong. It's just one great big political party. And I mean, yeah. Champagne popping cork type of party here. It's got nothing to do with the Constitution. So, Melissa, you had something else.
Well, just that if Christians who think Zionism is just fine would actually think through, I guess they can't because of cognitive dissonance, but if you look at the apostles, most of them were of a Jewish family, or at least out of Israel somewhere. And in particular, the Apostle Paul, and Peter, those two, if it was okay to be a Jew and not accept Jesus Christ and you still have your covenant with the Old Testament, then they would have done that. They wouldn't have, said there is no more Jew or Gentile, bond or free, male or female, all are one in Christ. They would have just stayed with being Jewish. And whenever there was a confrontation with James back in Jerusalem, that was what the thing was about, was people trying to hold on to Judaism and be Christian also, and you can't do it.
Yeah.
It's
well, and
opposite.
And thank you for bringing that up, because here's my question for you, Reverend Pike, is that we have the Rotund One down here in San Antonio.
Yes.
Pastor Hagee. And I've been to his church. I've looked. I've shook the man's hand, looked deep into his eyes. Didn't see too much, by the way. But clarify this for the listeners, please, because in Israel, there is no Messiah. There is no Jesus. They're still waiting for their Jesus. He's not come yet, not delivered them. So how can we have this Judeo-Christian thing where we believe in Jesus, but they don't? What is going on there? Oh, and let me get your answer after the break. I hear the break music
okay. Coming
up.
Thank you, John.
Okay, thank you, Melissa. I appreciate your call. Yeah, I mean, come on. The Holy Land, they decry and deny Christ. Would you get Pastor Hagee to deny Jesus Christ? Then how is it that Israel is such a friend of ours that we can have this Judeo-Christendom minus Jesus Christ? I'm confused. Yeah, if it wouldn't have been for men of good conscience and goodwill wanting freedom and liberty, where would we be today? Well, we held it off for a little while. But the powers, the dark powers and principalities, they are working overtime. Incessantly, all the time. Reverend Pike, before the break, straighten me out on this one. How can we have Judeo-Christendom when the Jews themselves do not believe in Jesus Christ? How did the churches here in this country saddle up to them? And as Pastor Hagee has said, that if we do not support Israel, then God will surely damn you.
Well, the fact of the matter is the New Testament is full of warnings against Talmudic Judaism. That is the Judaism of the Pharisees, which was on the scene when Jesus was there. And he so bitterly rebuked them, calling them a vipers, generation of vipers, whited sepulchers full of dead men, bones, all kinds of language like that. Much, much stronger, I should add, than I would ever say. Jesus would be called the ultimate anti-Semite today if he were on the scene. And Jesus warns, he says, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, meaning the teachings of the Pharisees. And Paul warns in Romans 8:9, saying that they are enemies of the gospel. And Christ calls them the synagogue of Satan. And Jerusalem is called Sodom and Egypt, where our Lord was crucified. All kinds of language like that is fills the Old Testament, with blame always laid squarely upon the Pharisees for the crucifixion of Christ. unfortunately, even though Martin Luther in the Reformation was very passionate in his concern that a Talmudic Jewish conspiracy be exposed and be denounced, nevertheless, in the middle of the 17th century, Oliver Cromwell invited the Jews back into England. They'd been banned from England, and the Manasseh ben Israel, who was the Kabbalistic Dutch rabbi, he came over and he appealed to Cromwell's Puritan evangelicalism and told him that, remember, he said, God says that he will bless those who bless Israel. And so Cromwell let them back in, and from that point on, there's been a real soft spot in the heart of the evangelical movement for suffering, wandering Israel, and so on. And then, of course, around the turn of the 20th century, there was a very strong courtship on the part of ADL in the early beginning of 1911 and so on, 1913, a strong courtship of the evangelicals in America, especially with this idea that God at last was bringing back his chosen people to their promised land as a haven from persecution. Of course, at that time, during the Bolshevik Revolution, clear back even into the 19th century, the Jews in Eastern Europe and Russia had been persecuted. They had been victims of pogroms, especially by the Tsar and in Poland and so on. But the reason for that was the Jews were socialists. These shtetls and Jewish communities and ghettos and so on were rife with socialist elements. In fact, the Jews had been founders of socialism, Marx and Moses Hess and so on, going clear back back to the beginning of the 19th century, and the Jews were the leaders of all the socialist revolutions of the 19th century in Europe. The Jewish encyclopedias are very quick to boast that the revolutions like Revolution of 1848, the Paris Commune, etc., were all led by Jews. And so the reason these Jews, these poor, suffering Jews, were victims of persecution was not just because they were Jewish, but because they were socialists and anarchists, and particularly because they were attempting to overthrow the Tsar. And yet, in faraway America, these intermediaries of Jewish propaganda, such as the ADL, were filling the ears of the evangelicals, saying, oh, we need a special land where these Eastern European Jews can flee this terrible, senseless, vulgar anti-Semitism in Russia and Eastern Europe. And the evangelicals bought that. And in buying that, they unified their aspirations and their biblical ethics with those of Talmudic Judaism. And with the emergence of Zionism, Herzl, and so on, came the idea, the quite new idea, even in Judaism, that the Jews could come back to Palestine in unbelief, in disobedience, even as atheists, agnostics, and so on. The obedience simply didn't matter, even though it's full of that requirement. It fills the Old Testament. And unfortunately, evangelicals, in order to make the Jews happy, they went along with this idea that God blesses his chosen people, the apple of his eye, unconditionally, without making any kind of moral distinctions. And that is flat-out blasphemy, heresy, because the Bible, all the way back to the Exodus, it is full of the idea that God will not allow unbelieving Jews as a nation.
We'll be right back, Ted. We're looking up the real names. Leon Trotsky, ladies and gentlemen, he was actually born Lev Davovich Bronstein. And you mentioned the Revolution of 1848. Ironically, Ted Pike, yesterday on the program, I went through the entire list of the German socialists that found their way in this country post-1848. They were welcomed by none other than Abe Lincoln, or, excuse me, Abraham Springsteen was Abe Lincoln's real name, and delivered into the city of London, basically the United States of America, by way of the Civil War and the Reconstruction, 14th Amendment and everything else that followed afterwards. He was the great emancipator. No. Tell you what Mr. Lincoln was. Most people recognize him by that name. Mr. Lincoln was not a unifier. What he did was he destroyed this constitutional republic. So when we talk about people that are masquerading as other things, ladies and gentlemen, they're not doing this. They're doing this for no other reason than to mask their true identities and who and what they are. I've said this time and time again. You know, Uncle Joe Stalin, he was Churchill's best bud and friend, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt, which he himself was a communist / socialist, that we were there to lend all support to put down the regime of Adolf Hitler's fascist Germany. Well, Ted, did we fight the wrong people over there?
Absolutely.
And so much information that in documentaries, folks, and I want you to understand this, this is going to take you a while to filter this through your head, because you the indoctrination has been perfected. There is not one History Channel piece you'll see. There is not one documentary you'll see. There is no movies that you will see. Nothing that ever touches even a modicum of truth of what actually happened in Europe, World War I and World War I Part II. Where was the United States, Ted Pike, after the Second World War? We sat back and let Russia take over Europe, just about.
Yes.
And here's this evil thing, communism, but we were right in bed with them.
Yeah.
See, a few years ago, in Russia, the Iron Curtain fell, and, oh, everybody's happy now. And I'm like, really? China, still a communist. It is Red China, folks. It is communism. But yet we invited them in. We have been having payola days like people still can't fathom. We literally built the next communist boogeyman. It seems as if, Reverend Pike, that we have enablers, that there is a system of government that's coming under the banner of the New World Order that is going to be socialist. See, communism doesn't work. Communism, the Puritans found that out when they came here, that everybody according to their need, and don't worry, you'll get your share. Well, a lot of people figured out, Ted, that, wait a minute, I don't have to put 100%. Maybe I can do 50. Maybe I can chuck and jive my way out of doing any work, but I still get my fair share. It didn't take them too long to realize that if you're not going to put the time in, you don't get the benefit of the community.
Yeah. Well, the thing that bothers me underneath the World Revolutionary Movement, especially as it has manifested itself in the 20th century, is that underneath these liberal movements, socialist movements, communist movements, the evangelicals have bidden Godspeed to the Jews, the Jewish supremacists who have made all of these movements possible. Go to the Encyclopedia Judaica, and they're very, very candid that Bolsheviks, the overflow of Bolshevism from Russia, came to New York, spread out as many, many Jewish immigrants, communist, Marxist immigrants, filled the trade unions in America, created socialism in America, particularly in the New Deal. You know, it's kind of interesting, if you studied history, modern history, the last several centuries, particularly in Europe, they talk about liberals, 19th century liberals, but 19th century liberals bear no resemblance to the phenomena called 20th century liberalism, which is a very socialist movement which was pioneered, according to Judaica, by these Marxist Jews coming out of Russia and entering in the FDR administration. So at the very root of the transformation of Western, of the world civilization, all the way to China, and throughout the world in the 20th century, we find these Antichrist Marxist Jews that the evangelicals are blessing, proclaiming them to be God's chosen people, and banning any criticism of them, saying that if you criticize the apple of God's eye, a curse is going to fall on you out of heaven. Now, this brings us up to date with Joe Farah and everything he stands, how he is perverting the right ways of the Lord regarding Israel and regarding the Jews by, again, being this filter. He's holding a spigot of media control and power over 7 million visits a month to his website with pure raw propaganda, I'll call it sewage, coming right out of Jerusalem, straight from Mossad, straight from the Knesset and Likud. It's coming straight out of Jerusalem, and it's being ingested by millions of evangelicals here in America. I feel God is leading me to pick a quarrel or sustain a quarrel with Farah. I'm not going to let him get away with calling me a lying anti-Semite. I'm going to hold him to it. I'm going to demand that he either apologize or give some substance to this libelous charge against me. And I'm going to hang on until we can get some kind of a national discussion about this unholy alliance you're talking about. How is it that the Church of God, the Church of Jesus Christ, is joining together under the leadership of people like Hagee and Beck and Pat Roberts and so on, who embrace the synagogue of Satan, embrace the Sodom and Egypt, Jerusalem, where our Lord was crucified? How is it that somehow this wide gulf between Christ and Antichrist has now been filled by love and understanding and tolerance and our so-called Judeo-Christian ethic?
Yeah.
How is this? This needs to be discussed. This needs to get out in the open, and a question needs to be asked: is this truly biblical? And, of course, it absolutely is not.
Well, and just a little bit more history and background, folks. Karl Marx, his real name, Moses Levi Mordecai, is his real name. He used to write for some big New York newspapers at the turn of last century, before the Russian Revolution. And there was funding from the Jews in New York to start the Russian Revolution.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Jacob Schiff, the head of Cunelobe, which is now Chase Manhattan, floated the whole cost of the Russian Revolution along with the Rothschilds and the Warburgs in Germany. And that is public record. That is undeniable. And one thing that people don't realize either is that exactly the same time in 1918, Cunelobe in New York also financed the Jewish Hollywood industry in California. So we have here a double-pronged attack on Western Christian civilization, both from the political revolutionary military arm and as well as media control, mm-hmm. corrupting the morals of Christian civilization.
Yeah, you people that are listening to this program today, have you seen the brand that Hollywood is putting out? Every disgusting issue that can be brought out is done by photoplay. There it is for your children. And,
yes.
And Ted, what it's coming down to anymore, that, well, we'll put up an evil guy, but we'll put up a more evil guy. And it's the guy, the lesser evil guy, that defeats the bigger, badder evil guy. See,
yes.
That's okay. There's no righteousness anymore. There is no right or wrong, yes or no. There is just propaganda. And
well, Farah particularly disgusts me because he attacks those who are telling the truth. Somebody tells the truth that Lehman Brothers or Goldman Sachs is Jewish. He joins with the ADL now in attacking and vilifying that person, just like he attacked poor old Helen Thomas, former White House reporter. Who made a few fairly mild statements about the Palestinians' right to occupy that land along with
the Jews. Well, I think her quote was, we should get the hell out of there. They should get the hell, Israel
yeah.
should get the hell out of there. And
I mean, that's right. Go back to the countries of origin. And but in the scriptures, in the Old Testament, it says, woe unto them that call evil good and good evil.
Oh,
and that really does epitomize Farah. He just has a perverse ability to vilify those valiant people like Helen Thomas and others who stand up and give just a little bit of light in the tremendous darkness that surrounds us today. He described her as spewing venom. I mean, World Net Daily did. And actually, I have an article at truthtellers.org in which I itemize all of Helen Thomas's accusations and confirm that they are absolutely true. Mm-hmm. In fact, I just want to remind people that our new video, along with a number of articles debunking Farah, are available right on the homepage now at truthtellers.org. We're getting a very strong response from people, broadcasts coming up and so on. This is a hot issue. This is a kind of a pivotal issue as we at the National Prayer Network are being led to go out and make an issue on the national scene against this entrenched evangelical Zionism.
Well, and, you know, I got to tell you something. A little side note here. A couple of months ago, one of our talk show hosts, Deanna Spengola, actually interviewed Helen Thomas, and she stopped during the interview and she said, "You can say that on this network?" She was astounded that she was able to speak freely without being censored or admonished that we might make somebody a little uncomfortable. She was
I'd like to see a can I get that on your archives?
As a matter of fact, if you would look up Deanna Spengola there,
yeah.
Mike, and give me the date. And you can download that program. I had
that's wonderful. I was on with Deanna. I had a very good interview with her. But
smart
Helen
lady.
Thomas is, yeah. If Helen Thomas is coming out with any more statements, I would really like to get a hold of them and do something with them.
All right. By the way, Deanna Spengola just made a comment off air here via the internet chat. She said, "Hooray for Ted, Pike, and John!" Thank you, Deanna. let's do this. I've got a caller that's been holding on here forever, my friend in Indiana, Keith. Hello, Keith.
Hello, John.
Hi.
Well, I was prompted to call in because of the woman who called in, and she talked about Paul being a Jew, and she hesitated. And the reason that Paul was truly called a Jew is because he was of the tribe of Benjamin. He was part of the house of Judah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've said 100 times on your network that you can prove that the Gentiles are the house of Israel. They are Israelites in the sense of Jacob. And the Jews that Paul is referring to are the house of Judah, who are also Israelites. They're the tribe's southern kingdom. And I'm going to tell you how to do it. And I don't care if you want to do it or Ted Pike wants to do it, because this will prove everything that he says is wrong, but you're listeners can do
that
it.
That Ted Pike is wrong? You're taking...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, he rejected Christian identity 30 years ago by his own admission. The word of God to Ted Pike is seed fallen by the wayside. That's the first part of Matthew 13. Ted does not understand Jew and Gentile. So I'm going to tell your listeners how they can do it in 9 verses. Okay, you got your pen? Romans 9, 24 to 26. Paul talks about the Jews and Gentiles, and he defines them. He identifies them by the book of Hosea. It's very simple. Verse 25 of Romans 9 is Hosea 2:23. Verse 26 is Hosea 1:10. And if you want to understand who they are, you go to Hosea 1:4-7. He divorced the house of Israel. He cast them off. That's why they were not a people. He no longer called them Israel, but they're the same race, still the descendants of Jacob. They just were not Israel for 770 years. When Christ died, he blessed them all and forgave them all, the house of Judah and the house of Israel. And that would be our Christian European fathers, the Celto-Saxon Germanic people, a white race who don't know who we are because we listen to Ted Pike, who doesn't know who he is.
Hey, excuse me, Keith. Hold on. Before you respond, Ted, you know, Keith, I've let you on this program. I've never stopped you from coming on this program. But if this is the kind of Christianity you're practicing, maybe you should think about maybe revamping it.
Well, how about this? How about you listen to biblical Christianity, where Paul identifies who the Gentiles are, because he's the apostle unto the Gentiles, and that's the house of Israel. How about you study the Bible, John? How about you do that?
Ted, go ahead.
Number one, we're talking here about a major controversy that is pregnant with the ability to bring tremendous light and truth to the evangelicals. As for the first time in my living memory, a national Christian conservative leader has recognized me, has denounced me, vilified me publicly. Now, that's basically the topic of this program today. Now, John, you want to take us off into arguing about what is the true Jew and what is the Gentile and so on. I just don't think we have time to get onto that. I will say something. My basic problem with Christian identity is that it says that in about the 6th century B.C., maybe the 5th century B.C., sometime in the period after the exile of the Northern Kingdom, which occurred in 722 B.C. under Sargon II, sometime after that, in the intervening centuries, that a band or group of these exiled Israelites wandered clear off to Western Europe. Now, by that time, Western Europe was densely populated with millions of Gauls, of Britons, of Celts, of Germans, of Iberians, millions and millions in that relatively late. We're talking about Hellenic Greece, the time the Hellenic Greeks came down into Greece 1,000 years earlier because of population pressure to the north. There are millions and millions of Western Europeans up there. And what identity says is this roving band or group or migration of Israelites, castaway, exiled Israelites, genetically made over Western Europe, maybe particularly Britain, with Semitic genes, so that we are now we are the descendants of the ancient northern kingdom of Samaria, the lost 10 tribes of Israel. I find that absolutely preposterous and unbelievable. And even though there's a lot of circumstantial evidence coming in that you say makes this a probability or a certainty, I just find it absolutely implausible. You see, I've made my whole career regarding the Talmud, the Kabbalah, the Jewish conspiracy, everything else, on solid, hard, textual evidence that comes out of Jewish sources and the facts of recorded history. But identity is such a montage, a collage of all kinds of speculations and circumstantial speculations. It's for that reason that I find it incredible. And I really, really can't. I don't want to get into this subject.
I don't either.
Yeah. Okay. Can I respond?
You got a minute.
Well, he went into a long diatribe, but the truth is that the Word of God that Ted Pike pretends to love said that the New Testament, the New Covenant, is made with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. That's Jeremiah 31:31 and Hebrews 8:8. And the thing is, the Celts and the Gauls, yes, they were Israelites. They were dispersed. And Paul said, I say then, hath God cast away his people? God forbid, for I also am an Israelite of the seed of Abraham, of the tribe of Benjamin. God hath not cast away his people, which he bore.
Do you know what? Let me break in here. And Keith, we're running out of time. I think you've made your points. I've given you ample time to do that. Now, let me make my comment. I had a merry band of Christian identity people in Michigan. They were working on me real, real hard, and I rejected it. I said, look, I don't want to hear this. You've said your piece. I've told you I'm not following your Christian identity, so please, you've delivered your message, now disperse. And I'll tell you how I finally had to do it. I was seated in somebody's kitchen. I had been out in the range that day. I was cleaning my .45. I reassembled it, put the clip back in the gun. I said, now, does the next person want to say something to me, or do you want to get out of my face? They left and never bothered me again. The idea that all Jews are evil and we've got to kill all the Jews. I've heard this rhetoric, and I think a lot of this stuff is misguided, but it serves no purpose rolling in with this vitriolic garbage that we need to kill all the Jews. If that, my friend, is how you feel, then now, you blasphemous one, now you're taking God's purview of I will be the judge.
Well, there is a dark side to the Christian identity movement, which does say that there are two seed lines. There's an evil, bad, unregenerate, satanic state line, the satanic line, which goes, you know, through Edom and through the darkened races, including the Jews and so on. And these people have no soul.
Oh, the mud people. I didn't even get around to the black people. No, I didn't even get around to them. You know, the same God that created all of these people, then he might as well just tell me to my face that God's defective and he's a fool.
That's right. Absolutely. And, you know, one of the most powerful lights on the national scene right now is Nathaniel Kapner, who is a converted Christian Jew. And that guy speaks out absolutely fearlessly, having come from rabbinic Judaism. And what I find so repulsive about the twin seed line version of Christian identity is that it is so at contrast, so contrary to the love and fellowship which God has between the Jews and the Gentiles who embrace Jesus Christ as their true Messiah, and who, by the way, the Gentiles become by faith. They become the seed of Abraham. There's a wonderful unity and cooperation. There is no Jew, Gentile, white, black, male, female, so on. There's a perfect unity in the body of Christ.
Well, and you brought up a good point, Ted, that, you know, what I think, I think this is biblical when I say this, that you hate the sin, not the sinner. And when you talk to me about eliminating people because they're mud people or they're brown or they're Jew or they're this, that is not a God that I subscribe to and the teachings of that God.
No. Uh-uh. Yeah,
I mean, I flat out reject it. It's mean. I mean, I'll stop short of saying it's evil. It is severely misguided.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, you know, John, as we're concluding this program today, I was trying to make the point that this really is a national standoff between a major leader of Christian evangelicalism, the Zionist evangelicals, and one who, myself, who represent what I think is authentic biblical doctrine concerning the Jews. I would encourage everyone who's been listening to this program to get over to truthtellers.org, watch our dynamic 8-minute video. I believe you said you played it, but
yes,
watch
sir.
It. And in fact, if you wanted to put it up on RBN, your website, you're really welcome to do that. We need to know that I'm throwing down the gauntlet. I'm daring Farah to produce evidence that I am a lying anti-Semite. He's made this public now, and we need to have a standoff here. It's kind of like Elijah and the false prophets on the top of Mount Carmel. We got to have a shootout here. We got to make a big fuss about this and get him to recant or get him to open up in some way or another, or else go on the attack against me. If he wants to do that, then we're ready for battle.
Well, Ted, I don't know that that's ever going to happen. Once you own the majority of the medias and you have your fools joining in singing the same song, I don't look for any constructive and honest debate on that subject. By the way, if you'll do me a favor, Ted Pike, just hang on the line here for a second to get your email, hopefully a personal one, because we're going to send you over the Friday, August 5th of this year, Deanna Spingola interview with Helen
Wonderful.
Thomas. Okay?
Great. Thank
All
you.
Right. Ted, aside from Keith, I thought this was a pretty good program. All right.
Yeah, really nice to get back on the air with you, John. It's been too long.
All righty. Thank you so much, Reverend. Have a good Friday.
Same to you. God bless.